Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to my presentation, Disaster Shelter Assessments, using environmental health data to protect facility occupants during disasters. Today I'm going to highlight some of the work that we have done at Florida International University in the area of disaster shelter assessments, which I think they offer a great opportunity for us to use this data for prevention in disaster shelters during disasters. So today my objectives are to describe the prevalence of shelter assessments in state and territorial jurisdictions, and these are environmental health shelter assessments. Second, to highlight the usage and preparedness efforts by states and territories in the shelter assessment area. Third, I'm going to show results of data, you know, just a small sample of data that we have obtained about shelter assessments, so you can see some of the areas that they include that, you know, assessors evaluate in facilities during disasters. So as many of disasters are very complex situations. They require a lot of organizations working together. Some of the disaster consequences include population displacements. And as the result of that, there is a need for shelter that is created. And these people need to be placed in disaster shelters, evacuation shelters, or other types of temporary facilities. So response organizations need data. They need information during disasters for decision making and to understand what are the needs of the affected populations. So for that, fortunately for us in the public health area, we have a very good portfolio of disaster assessment tools. Some of them include the CASPER, and that testifier is going to talk about that. We have also medical and mental health needs assessments, reproductive health needs assessments, occupational health needs assessments, and environmental health shelter assessments, which this is the area that I'm going to discuss today. So what are environmental health assessments of disaster shelters? Well, these are just basically assessment of the hygiene and sanitation conditions inside the shelter. Basically, people in shelters, they don't need a lot of things, but they need places that are clean, that they are adequately staffed. We need facilities where the food is safe, because you introduce, there's a tendency to people do a lot of help for victims of disasters, so they bring food, cakes, all kinds of things to the people in the shelter. So we need to ensure that those items are safe for consumption. We also need to protect people from environmental hazards, such as exposure to the elements, to vector-borne diseases, to carbon monoxide, and so on. And we also need the facilities that adequately service and staff, you know, make sure that the contracts for cleaning, for picking up the trash, and also for making sure the areas where kids are, those areas are clean, and we have adequate ratios of worker to children and of worker to number of people in the shelter facility. So as you can see here in the picture, I mean, there are a lot of things that you can assess from that picture with regards to environmental health and risk to occupants. So this is what happens in a disaster shelter. You know, in public health, we always talk about the agent, the host, and the environment. So I put this model here just to describe what happens in a disaster shelter. You know, you bring the host, which the host can be the elderly, the chronically ill persons. Those are the people that actually go to shelters. You know, I know CDC has conducted, as well as a number of states have conducted a number of needs assessments in shelters. And those describe this population very well. They're the chronically ill people with the acute illness. Many people are taking medication, very young, very old. So, and now we have another variable, which is we bring pets and companion animals into the environment. So the environment it could be a crowded one that where there is limited hygiene and sanitation, where basic services are not available, and very, very austere conditions. Many times after an event, we might have a shelter that don't have any water, or we have sewage problems, or they don't have any power, and the air is heavy, and the environmental conditions there are very, very bad. And then you can have some kind of a agent, infectious agent, or any other condition that spreads person to person, and you have a recipe for anything to happen in that disaster shelter. So in the past, we have been able to document a number of infectious disease outbreaks as well as other type of health conditions. And this is just a sample of them. And I think that these things happen more often. We just don't have maybe a good surveillance systems to kind of capture this type of events. I remember back on, during Hurricane Katrina, there were about 1,200 shelters in operation in about 23 states. So imagine the task of putting a surveillance officer in each one of those shelters. And so, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to take place. For conducting these environmental health assessments, there are a number of tools available. Some states have developed their own shelter assessment tools, and back in 2008, CDC released an environmental shelter assessment tool for shelters. And however, since that tool went out, we don't know what the level of use of that tool is, or how many states or territories are using these environmental health assessment methods. So we decided to conduct a two-phase project. The first phase of the project was to ascertain, you know, how prevalent these environmental health assessment methods are. So we conducted a state and territorial survey in which we target all 50 states of the territories and DC. So we the survey was to ascertain knowledge and familiarity, procedures and training, utilization of planning and exercises, and the last domain was responding feedback. We used a web tool, but about half of the surveys were received by email, and they emailed it to me, and we got a couple that came by U.S. Postal Service, which you know, these days is coming very unusual. We use Qualtrics, which is a web survey platform to conduct our survey. So we received 55 responses. So out of the 56 jurisdictions that were target, so that was a pretty good response rate. With regards to knowledge and familiarity, those that responded to the questions, about 92% were, with regards to the states, about 92% were knowledgeable about environmental health shelter assessments, and all the territories that responded were familiar with that. With regards to tools available, because there's the CDC tool and the other tools that are available, that some states are using the CDC, a modified version of the CDC tool, and some of them have created their own tools. About 76% of the states were knowledgeable of the tools available. And then I asked a question about familiarity with information, because these tools have many domains that they look at the water, they look at the sanitation, waste, conditions of the facility. So I ask a question about familiarity with the information collected, because it's not, you know, people say, well, yeah, I know about assessment tools, but we wanted to make sure that people understand what's on those assessment tools. So about 87% of them say that they're familiar with the information that is collected by shelter assessments. With regards to procedures and training, even that there was a high prevalence of a jurisdiction saying that they're familiar with the tools, only about 40% of them have received training in shelter assessments, and only 53% have developed operational procedures. And this is an area that is very important, because during disasters you often get help from outside the state many times, and you need to have some kind of standard way to do this, and also a standard way to collect information, especially if you have more than one state that is affected and you're looking at the information from another level to decide, okay, where are you going to send the resources? So this is, this was a very interesting finding. With regards to preparedness activities, and these are defined like engaging shelter partners, shelter organizations, and so on. About 96% of the states say that they are, yes, indeed, engaging those partners. And, you know, we understand that the Fed grant, the CDC Fed grant, asked for jurisdictions to engage in some of those activities. So this is a pretty good indicator that they indeed are doing that. We also ask how many of them participate in disaster drills and exercises with shelter partners, specifically shelter partners. About 88% of them indicated that they're doing so. So with regards to disaster planning and exercise activities, here is a breakdown. And as you can see, you know, the main partners, you know, we were expecting to see this, even that no one had conducted an assessment or a survey of these activities. We were expecting that if you are in the shelter area, you will work very closely with emergency management and the American Red Cross, and the survey indeed showed that those are some of the main partners. So in a second phase of the project, we contacted the states and territories again and say, hey, you know, are you doing these assessments? Would you be willing to share some of this information with us? So we received a number of records. About six jurisdictions sent us records, and we did some data mapping. And what we did was to use the CDC shelter assessment form as the model to put those variables somewhere according to a number of domains. Those were facility, food service, drinking water, sanitation, waste management, health and medical, children's area, sleeping area, and companion animals. And we just conducted very straightforward descriptive analysis of that information. So here we have a description of the number of shelter assessments that were conducted by a specific disaster. And this is only one jurisdiction, because what happened when we were doing the data mapping, we ran into that many states had different terminology or description of what the variables are. So we just took the largest database and we did a descriptive analysis of that large database. Here we show the types of shelter facilities that are commonly used, at least in that particular jurisdiction. So there were schools, churches or faith-based places, locations, and others like military armories and many places use arenas and so on. So here I'm showing the where those deficiencies were found according to the CDC domains, the different domains. So as you can see, most of the deficiencies were found in the area of sanitation, facility, and facility means like damage to the facility or issues with the facilities, food service area, and a sleeping area. Here is showing the deficiencies according to the CDC form domain, and again, you know, you can see that there is an opportunity here to look at these issues across various types of disasters or public health emergencies. So in terms of suggestions for future direction, I think first we need to understand what's going on, why our states are not embracing these assessment methods more openly, and because, you know, in a big disaster, we need to have we still gonna have to collect information, and the best way for us to have data and methods that are standard across different organizations. We also need to evaluate the potential contribution of this data. You know, we always talk about bad shelters, how the people got sick in the shelter or something. So here's an opportunity for us to study causality, and also to see whether there's a relation between bad shelters and actual outcomes or outbreaks. So we also need to study this as a risk assessment to a method for, you know, as another method for risk assessments to kind of protect people during disasters. And this is not the first time we use environmental health data for risk assessments. For example, the FDA food code, it uses some of the same variables, and the CDC versus sanitation program use environmental health data to kind of ascertain risk for people in cruise ships or in the case of the FDA in restaurant facilities. So in conclusion, you know, shelters are very important. There's nothing more important in a disaster than to take care of the people affected by the disaster. Okay, we can do all the things we want, fancy things, but the most important thing is to address the basic needs of people. We need to protect the occupants. We know about their vulnerabilities, and as such, we need to act. There are some tools that are available, like the shelter assessment tool, and we need to become more familiar with those assessment methods. So during a large disaster, we can have information for, you know, that is useful for decision making. That's all I have. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
So we have time for a couple of questions. Do we have any questions for Miguel?
If the outcomes of like the deficiencies are associated with the size of the disaster shelter and the number of people inside,
or the size of the jurisdiction?
Yeah, unfortunately, the information we have was very limited, but we're going to continue to add more information. And again, we have the issue of consistency of how the data is collected in different areas, and we only talking about data from one data set, so we cannot generalize some of these things, so we have to be careful about our interpretation here. But, you know, again, that's what we need to do. We need to kind of maybe come together and as a group and look at this information and see how this information can answer a number of questions, like, is crowding an issue in shelter that can cause outbreaks? But, you know, we, anecdotally, we say yes, but we don't have the evidence there yet, and I think this is a good opportunity to do that.
I have a question really quick, and then I'll go to you. Miguel, did you find out whether or not in your survey any states have requirements for conducting assessments, environmental health assessments, and a frequency of doing them? Do you do them just once, or do you do them repeatedly if the shelter's going to remain open for more than a week? What did you find?
Well, we know that some states have adopted the CDC shelter assessment tool as is. States like Florida and North Carolina and others have a slight variability of the shelter too, but there are no specific requirements from anybody to conduct these assessments. But again, you know, if you have a bad situation, you're going to have people in close quarters on a very austere environment. I think the public health sense type of activity that we need to do, we need to monitor people. This is a good opportunity and a good tool, I think, to just to keep an eye on the situation. There are no specific requirements, but some states are more active, like Florida has strike teams, and all those strike teams are fully trained in the use of environmental health shelter assessments.
Okay. One more question.
Yes, most shelters are predetermined because they have to be assessed by the emergency management agencies. There are some jurisdictions who are doing pre-assessment of these shelter facilities. So we know some environmental jurisdictions that have gone ahead and inspected those shelters. The thing that changes after an event is that all of a sudden after the hurricane goes by or the tornado, then you have a shelter without water or without power. So even that you have you pass with high colors, you know, during the pre-assessment phase, but now, you know, you have to close that shelter because you cannot keep people in there. So that's why it's so important, the pre-assessment and the initial assessment and then follow-up assessments during an event, because things can change.
Thank you. We'll have time for more questions at the end. Thank you very much.
Thank you.